There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hey, this is Brandy Scott from The Business Breakfast. This is our bite-sized business breakfast, our daily roundup of the best things we've been doing on the show on Wednesday, the 29th of January. We are this morning looking at the effects of the coronavirus on the Chinese economy and on businesses here in the UAE. We know that globally, a load of firms have cracked down on unimportant or non-essential travel into China. Apple is one of them. In its reports that came out overnight, they said that they'd restricted travel by employees to only business critical into China. Other firms such as Facebook doing the same. Let me find this Facebook status actually and statement, because it is quite interesting. Facebook says that it is restricting travel, non-essential travel. It says it's doing it out of an abundance of caution, but they're doing it to protect the health and safety of employees. Any Facebook employees who've recently travelled to China are being asked to work from home for a short period. And we know that firms are doing it here locally as well. DP World telling Reuters that that was the case. All travel to China suspended until further notice unless it's an emergency. And we're getting a load of messages in from you this morning as well. We were asking whether or not your company is changing its travel policies. I mean, HR departments tend to go for safety, don't they? They're thinking about the good of individuals, of families that are not their own, tend to err on the side of caution. Here's one this morning. Someone's got in touch with us and said, I was due to take a Saudi delegation of 9 people to Shenzhen next week. We've postponed it based on the advice from our supplier. They are cancelling any international visitors for safety.
Someone else writes in, my son was due to have a school trip to China in February. Till now, they did not cancel it. Not sure why. Plus, when we've asked them, they said that they might not be able to refund the parents' deposit if they have to cancel. It is still a very fluid situation.
Well, we're going to get the economist's take now. Daniel Richards is a senior economist at Emirates NBD. We spoke to him about the fact that DP World has banned staff from travelling to China and asked how his impact assessment for the UAE has evolved over the past 24 hours.
With a number of confirmed cases of the coronavirus in China now nearing 7,000, the human cost of the outbreak is clearly shocking, but it's still pretty difficult to ascertain the impact, the material impact in the global economy, what this will be. So for the time being, we are leaving our growth projections for Dubai and the UAE unchanged. That is at 3% for Dubai and 2.4% for UAE this year. However, just as the earnings results from big firms overnight highlighted that the virus was a growing risk for outlook, we would also caveat these growth projections, which are reliant on the ultimate material impact of the outbreak being contained, if we're not seeing too big a fallout from this. Now, analysts have been looking to the SARS outbreak in 2003 for some guidance as to how this might play out. But as with anything in this kind of situation, there are some major differences. And one of the key ones is that the massive change in the Chinese economy over the past 17 years, in terms of growth in particular. And for starters, China's share of global GDP has risen from around 4% in 2003 to more like 20% today. And at the same time, it's become a more open economy, more integrated into global markets. That's coincided with the massive globalization we've seen around the world more generally. Chinese air travel has also grown exponentially over the period. So given all these factors, it could hold a much greater risk to other economies than it did in 2003, including Dubai. Now, we have seen announcements from some local firms, such as DP World, that they will not be sending staff to China for a time being. What we will be watching for in particular is if it starts to have a real impact on global travel figures. And this will not only impact our local economy for the tourism sector, but also through a knock-on effect on oil prices, which will fall if there's a lasting drop in demand.
And that is Daniel Richards, senior economist at Emirates NBD. Speaking of demand, we've been talking this morning to a manufacturer of face masks. All the images obviously coming out of China. Face masks are plenty, a huge amount of demand, fears about supply. Sanjay Kumar is marketing manager at one manufacturer, Sultome Medical Equipment Trading. And we asked him this morning about that increased demand and whether or not they were ramping up production.
Actually, mainly our supplies are from China and India, but now the Arab health exhibitions are going on. People from companies from China who are here, even they are asking us to take back some quantities from us to send back to China for their own use, actually.
So there you go, Chinese delegations at Arab Health looking to buy up face masks in this market to take home. Bit of a debate, actually, on our messaging system this morning about how much the media should be paying attention to this. About, I suppose you could say, proportionate response.
Yeah, Henk has written in saying that the media is blowing this one out of all proportion. Pete wrote in with a similar sentiment, saying there were 61,000 deaths related to flu in the most recent flu season in the United States. No one stopped travelling to the United States because of that. We are, he says, overreacting. We've been getting the thoughts, because there are a lot of the world's medical professionals and medical leaders in Dubai at the moment for the Arab Health event, which Saji just mentioned, and they include Dr. Anton Dekker from the Mayo Clinic. He's the president of the Mayo Clinic International, and we asked him how seriously or not should we be taking the coronavirus.
Firstly, it's a good opportunity to remind people to get the flu shot, again the miracle of vaccines. Everyone's learning as we go along. I think what the public needs to remember is that these extremely clever infectious disease specialists all over the world are scientists. And you don't want them panicking when they shouldn't panic, and you don't want them being too slow when they should act faster. You've got a lot of people, including in our own organization, working really hard to figure out the right thing to do and without making people panic. In the meantime, the best thing you can do is use a lot of common sense. Wash your hands, don't sneeze on people, and also follow travel advisories.
Face masks? Good, bad, indifferent?
It hasn't been broadly recommended, so I think I'd leave it up to the individual. These things are very dynamic, though, and from day to day, the recommendations from the World Health Organization and other organizations may change.
Maria Boutros in the studio with us now from the ARN News Centre with breaking news.
So the UAE Ministry of Health and Prevention has announced the first case of the new coronavirus in the country. According to the national news agency WHAM, officials have confirmed that the people diagnosed with the flu-like virus belong to the same family. They reportedly came from the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the new strain initially emerged. And medical officials have also said that their condition is stable and they're under strict observation.
Right, well, we'll have more as that developed. The ARN News Centre app is where you need to go
exactly. If
you want updates. Plus, of course, our news team will be covering it live on air. Maria, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk about Careem now, the technology ride-hailing company. Joining us in the studio, I'm delighted to welcome the Managing Director for the Gulf and Pakistan at Careem, Basil Al-Nahlawi. Basil, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on again.
Busy few days and indeed busy few weeks for you. The merger with Uber, or the takeover by Uber, has just been completed. And then, earlier on this week, we had this statement from Careem, from Madasir Shaker, the Chief Executive and Co-Founder of Careem. He says, in this new era, we are focused on profitability and sustainable growth. This means investing in new skills and technologies and cutting in others as we change the shape of the organization. 15% of our colleagues will be affected. 10% of colleagues are being reassigned to new roles, and 5% of colleagues will leave Careem as their roles no longer exist. Basil, why did Careem have to do this?
This is actually part of the 2020 strategy, and it's the continuation of our pivot from a ride-hailing single vertical app to a multi-vertical, multi-service platform. And so this pivot involves a lot of things, which is maybe take the foot off our pedal on certain verticals, which are maturing now, and press more on the new verticals that we are investing in, such as Careem Pay, Careem Now, which is our delivery platform, Careem Bus, Careem Bike, and all the new services that we're planning to expand and provide to the rest of the customers in the region.
We've had a number of messages in from people about this, focusing in particular on the job cuts, that depending on which report you read, 150 or so people who are going to be leaving Careem. People saying these are the people who helped build Careem into what it is today. Do they not deserve a bit more loyalty now that the Uber transaction has happened?
So it's quite unrelated to the Uber transaction. You know, Kareem continues to be an independent body with a board. That board has our two co-founders on it and three Uber senior management on that board. The decision is, you know, I mean, we used to live in an era where you grow at all cost. All the tech companies around the world were going through that phase. At this stage, profitability is a big thing. And so if you couple that with our pivot in the app, our pivot to a super app, we had to make changes to ensure the sustainability of the business and ensure also the right set of skills are there to make to run the business much more efficiently. You know, I'll just give you an example. We were running all verticals separately, separate apps. However, now we want to move into one platform. So you might have had multiple roles doing the same thing. But in a platform world, you'll need one person doing that where they're all consolidated. So it's just a natural progression of where we're moving towards. It's always tough. The number isn't that big. 10% were...
What is the number, Basil? How
it's
many
5%
jobs?
Of our workforce. 10% of these of our colleagues were moved around to different, you know, with the right skill sets, they were moved to different verticals or different parts of the business. Where we're focusing more, and 5% we had to say goodbye to. And even though, you know, every person is an individual, and so it's a difficult decision to make. However, we were able to provide them a caring exit as much as we can, and so on. Tenure was not part of it. It was more skill set based and role based.
What skills and what roles have gone, Basil?
It was across the board, across markets. It was in finance, in HR, it was in branding, in some cases a bit of supply. So we spent a lot of time on this. There was a lot of effort and analysis being spent on this to make sure we're making the right decisions for the future of Kareem.
So in terms of what happens next, what can you tell us? This focus on profitability is interesting. And we were talking about this, as everyone was when the announcement came out. And in some cases, profitability is a dirty word. Why is Kareem getting rid of staff to make a profit? On the other hand, we all remember WeWork and the disaster of the WeWork IPO. And you touched on this earlier, this growth at all costs from tech companies and just forgetting about profitability has kind of gone out of fashion a little bit. What can you tell us about how profitable Kareem was in 2019 as a standalone entity and how that's going to change in 2020 and beyond?
So luckily we've, like you said, it was a world of grow at all cost, which is the only thing that private investors wanted. However, as we've seen, a few of these companies have gone public and public investors want a completely different profile. And so this is why the world or tech companies who are even not public today have slowly switched to that new strategy of profitability because they know what's coming. And so in terms for Kareem, if you look at 2019, we never thought that you can always be unprofitable forever. So we've always had a focus on running the business efficiently. We've always had some markets that were profitable. However, now we want to make the entire ride-hailing business profitable this year. So that's the difference. It's the focus is that we want to make this apply this across all markets and not just the few markets where economics were really great.
Does that new pressure, does that new focus come with Uber's acquisition? Has Uber's acquisition of Kareem changed your priorities or your timeline at all?
That's because that specific focus doesn't come from that, no. I think, you know, before the deal closed, that discussions were happening early last year. We knew this was coming, but we didn't know it'll come this early. So the path of profitability was always there. It was always a discussion in our board meetings. And it just, when it happened and went public, we realized, look, we need to get there quicker than before. And so we can actually run a real business.
Well, let me throw a bit of Silicon Valley tech jargon at you, which is unit economics, a phrase you'll be familiar with. Does the unit economics of ride hailing stack up? Can it be profitable? Because there are critics of the model, whether it's Uber or Ola or Didi in China or yourselves, who say that actually the unit economics of ride hailing just doesn't stack up. What do you think about that?
No, that's not true. At least not in our region. And if it's not in our region, I think it's even better probably in the West versus maybe the East. But the unit economics are healthy. The difference is, you know, in the early stages, it's the aggressive growth you want to achieve. That means anything you're making is you want to spend back on acquisition of customers in the different markets and in the different regions and the expansion. So, no, I think the unit economics are there. It's just, you know, you gotta slow down a little bit on the growth or do it much more efficiently and organically versus inorganically.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle.
They're kicking off now, not with cars, but with two wheels. Bezal Al-Nalawi, the Managing Director of Gulf and Pakistan for Careem, is in the studio with us. Bezal, thanks for staying.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about Careem bikes, because I won't be the only person whose neighbourhood has suddenly acquired some green and white bike stands that are starting to fill up. When will we be actually able to use them?
We're hoping very soon. If you remember, this was a project that we won through the RTA 15 years to design, build and deploy these bike sharing scheme. It's supposed to have 3,500 bikes across 350 stations across the city of Dubai. These bikes, you know, it's the first of the kind in the region. And it's also, all these bikes will be pedal assisted bikes, which makes it a lot more fun and easy to ride.
Electric bikes?
It's not fully electric, but it's pedal assisted. But it's the same concept pretty much, where you pedal a little bit and then it picks up speed. And it picks up speed and you know, makes it much less effort for you to pedal longer distances. And you can change those using the gears. First phase will include 80 stations, 800 bikes across certain communities. Some of the largest we are aware of: Dubai Marina, JLT, Media City, Barsha, Dera, Mankhool, Karama, Downtown, among the largest, and the Greens.
What are you going to do about helmets?
We're still in discussion, so we don't have a final date on the launch yet. We are trying to figure that out with the RTA, I think, very soon. As you can tell, the stations are out. A lot of the bikes are deployed. There's no law on having helmets, but of course we will incentivize people to use their helmets for extra safety on these bike. Now, one thing is that these bikes will only be found wherever there are bike lanes or the streets have a certain speed limit that does not exceed, I believe, 40 or 60.
So in terms of the other last mile micro-mobility solutions that you're looking at, yesterday, the day before, we were speaking to Yanis Rostock from AECOM, the big engineering company, about Dubai's new soft mobility strategy to build bike lanes and shaded walkways around areas of Dubai. They're going to start in, I think, Qusais and Basra and one or two other areas, but they plan to roll it out among all the high-density areas of Dubai. How involved are you in that soft mobility strategy from the RTA? How important is that before you roll out the bikes or scooters or whatever else it might be?
Yeah, it's very important, right? And we are lightly involved in the sense, you know, we have a view on these high density locations. We have a view on where a lot of the commuters go from and to. And so we've been sharing this information with them and collaborating specifically for bikes at the moment. Because we do believe the last mile will help with congestion, reduction of number of cars, especially for the short trips that today, you know, you take that really short trip versus get on a bike and get to the metro station.
It's fine now. It's January. The weather's cold. You put on a jacket and you're okay. But in July, what are we going to do? We know that part of this soft mobility strategy has covered walkways on some of the routes, but you can't smother Dubai in covered walkways everywhere. Well, maybe you can.
Yeah, I don't know about the covered walkways. I have the same view you do. However, to tell you the truth, this is the way we've been seeing it, and that's our hypothesis, is that if you're targeting just tourists and leisure riders, then maybe you're right. We won't see them on a bike in the middle of the summer. However, when you're targeting commuters who already get off a metro and walk that 700 meters today in the sun or with an umbrella, that's a much shorter trip on a bike, quicker and actually a bit more breezy. So I still think commuters will do it.
Well, let's go back to cars. Let's look at what's happening in Oman. You've said recently that you're going to be pulling out of Oman from the 3rd of February due to the absence of regulatory factors. What actual factors are you talking about?
You know, for you to actually launch in a city and expand and actually become a service, a customer favorite service, you have to provide a very reliable, accessible and convenient service. And ride-hailing, that's the value proposition of ride-hailing. To do so, you need to have the right supply. And so if the regulatory environment does not allow you or does not allow for investment and growth in the supply, then you are not really providing the customers a service in the first place.
What's it not letting you do, Basil?
So there's restrictions around who you can work with and what licenses you can get to operate, really. So it's really just the basics around that. And it's more maybe they don't have clarity on what that regulation should look like. Hopefully, with time, these governments can get more clarity and maybe we can reconsider.
Let's talk about the so-called super app that Madassa, your chief executive, is talking about. Yes, you started off as a ride-hailing company. Now I'm looking at my Careem app. I can book a car, of course, but I've got three other things that you'll do, food, delivery, and also packages. In a year's time, when I'm opening up my green app, what other weird and wonderful stuff am I going to have? I mean, how far can you take this?
So in a year's time, that's a good time. That's a long time in Careem, the world. But, you know, like you said, you'll continue to see food, you'll see delivery, you'll see payments much more, which means that you can top up your mobiles, which you can do today, actually. You can send payments outside and so on. But the exciting part is that, you know, these are three verticals we want to do on our own. The payments, the ride hailing, the food, the deliveries is stuff we want to do ourselves. But in a year's time, hopefully, we'll start onboarding global players who provide other services. And to your question, it's going to differ from city to city. Because in Dubai, maybe my customers want travel services and they want, I don't know, laundry services. So then we're hoping to onboard people or companies that do travel and laundry and so on. So per city, we'll look at what customers want, where they want their convenience in, what offline services they want to move them digitally and provide that service through partnerships. I'd like to say, you know, think of us, we used to be a store in a mall that provides ride hailing services. Today, we are building a mall and we provide three of these stores and then we want to provide space for other services to be in our mall.
Couple of final questions. If Malcolm was here, he would, as ever, ask you about the merger with Uber or the takeover by Uber. He was always concerned that the reduction in competition would lead to, and this is basic economics, would lead to, competition tends to improve service levels and reduce price. You take away competition because Uber and Careem are now one organization. He was worried that service levels may fall and prices may rise. What can you tell us about that? Can you really convince me as a customer and people listening that Uber and Careem are going to carry on competing in terms of service levels and price, the green app versus the black app?
I can assure you that will continue. You know, the companies are quite independent. There are no discussions on a country level among teams. The direction from leadership to these teams is that we have to win in our markets. And I'll just give you an example. You know, one of the KPIs the UAE team focuses a lot on is bad rated trips. And how can we continuously do that? And that hasn't changed, not the day we had the intention to make this acquisition, and not since this month has been the lowest ever in the history of Careem. So clearly on the ground, the push is to continue to provide quality, compete and win in the game in each market.
Great talking to you. Appreciate you joining us this morning to answer all those questions in what's been a very busy week for Careem. Basil Al-Nahlawi is the Managing Director for the Gulf and Pakistan at Careem. Thanks for your time.
Thanks again for having me.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Newsmakers.
The movers and shakers shaping your world.
Right, having a look at some of those earnings. Let's start with the biggie, Rich. Let's start with Apple.
Numbers overnight described as blockbuster by many analysts. Revenue and profit both beating expectations for Apple. They released their numbers after the bell. And this was significant because it's what they call the holiday quarter. If you think about the Apple cycle, they announce their new iPhone every year in September. And then you get the final quarter of the year, October, November, December. And still, those holiday sales in the United States, Thanksgiving and Christmas, are a big part of Apple's sales. The iPhone 11, people weren't sure about it. A, was it different enough to get people to upgrade? And B, was it too expensive? Will people just turn their back on it and say, not doing this anymore, I'm just buying an HTC for half the money? But it looks like it worked because the numbers were great. For the quarter, you had a 9% increase in revenue to, and I'm choking on these words, $91 billion in 3 months. That's an astonishing amount of money.
Oh, if you want an astonishing amount of money, Apple's cash reserves are now $207 billion. The GDP of New Zealand is $205 billion.
It's a behemoth. And people have been queuing up, and probably me included, to say, look, this is not sustainable. The history of consumer electronics companies, whether it's Sony or Nokia or BlackBerry or whoever it may be, suggests that they do not remain stars for a long time. Auto companies do. They endure for decades. Consumer electronics companies, their star shines brightly, but not for that long. But Apple is defying all of that, and they are still cranking up enormous profits. You have to doff your cap to them.
You do, but there is some concern about which section of the business those profits are coming from. Wearables did exceptionally well. iPhones did better than expected because we did have a slightly dodgy holiday sales period for iPhones last year, didn't we, that got people worried about whether or not we had reached peak handset, whether our cycles for replacing handsets were now irrevocably changed. It would seem not. All you need to do is come out with a phone that's got three cameras on the back and everything goes back to normal. But there are concerns about services. And that is because the profit margins on phones are really good. The profit margins on services are awesome. And that is why investors want to see more services. And that is why you keep buying cloud data storage and keep getting reminders. Because it's cheaper to provide, quite frankly, than a phone. Making, marketing, packing, shipping, warehousing, selling, etc. And one area that seems to have not done as well, maybe as expected, and I say seems because we don't know the actual subscriber numbers that didn't come out in the earnings calls, is Apple TV or Apple TV Plus.
This is the Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon thing.
Yeah, much was made of all the award nominations and the winnings, which was great for things like The Morning Show. But subscriber numbers, specific numbers, haven't been given. Although if you look into what has happened with revenue from the services segment, you can kind of extrapolate and have a bit of guesswork as to whether or not that is performed as people would hope. And it would seem probably not. Most analysts saying, look, we had Disney coming out with Disney's massive subscriber service at the same time. So a lot of people will have chosen one or the other, that competition from Disney Plus. So we will see what happens with Apple TV a little bit later down the line.
Let's get the mood in Silicon Valley, the reaction to these results. CNBC reporter Josh Lipton has been talking to Tim Cook. Now, we haven't heard that full interview yet, but this is Josh himself.
I did have the chance to check in with Apple CEO Tim Cook. We talked about the quarter, and certainly one issue for investors has been the coronavirus and what kind of impact that could have on Apple, whether impact on sales or production. Tim Cook saying that, listen, he's going to have a lot more to say about on the call. However, he did say it did impact the range of that Q2 guidance. Cook telling us, as you can see from the range, it anticipates some level of issue there. Otherwise, we would not have a $4 billion range. Again, though, the midpoint of that range at $65 billion, certainly better than the $62.5 billion the Street was looking for.
And the thing with Apple, of course, is that it's got a double whammy with the problems in China with the coronavirus. It's not just that China is a massive market for iPhones and the rest. It's also the supply chain. It's also a big part of the supply chain. So being impacted from both sides there. Sticking with our theme as well this morning of how the coronavirus is impacting companies' travel plans, Apple is one that has restricted travel for its employees to China to business critical. It's already closed one retail store in China and it has restricted hours in some of its other big Apple stores. Plus, it's taking precautions within those stores. It's got temperature checks for staff and deep cleaning going on.
And of course, local companies here in the UAE affected by that as well. We've heard over the past 24 hours from DP World saying all travel to China is suspended until further notice, unless for emergency purposes. We continue to monitor WHO and government advice. That is DP World based here in Dubai.
Yeah, particularly if you're a boss and you're in HR, because, I mean, the weighing up of the risk for this, you're making decisions not just for your own travel, but obviously for employees. Be really interested to hear what's going on in those conversations. Other earnings that also have referenced the coronavirus overnight. Whilst you were sleeping, Starbucks came out with its quarterly earnings. They beat analysts' expectations. The numbers themselves were good, just over 7 billion. Sales in store, you know, like-for-like stores, were better than expected, the growth there. However, shares initially fell on the news. And the reason they fell was because Starbucks couldn't give out its numbers without talking about China. It has closed more than half of its stores in China, and China is Starbucks' second largest market. It's gone big in there because it has been competing with Luckin Coffee, which is the massive Chinese giant Chinese coffee chain. So there's a lot of concern about what this could mean for Starbucks. They've said that they're working with authorities in China, but they've put out their fiscal guidance for 2020 and have already said those aren't the final numbers. We're going to update the guidance around April because we need to get a handle on what's happening with this virus. We can't predict anything that's going to happen, you know, for the first half of 2020 at the moment, while we don't know what's happening here.
Locally, the big number yesterday was from the biggest bank in the UAE, FAB, down the road in Abu Dhabi. And it's one of those glass half full or half empty numbers. I'll give you the glass half full version, first of all, and that is that FAB profit soars by 4% to 12.5 billion dirhams, which it did. That is the full year number for 2014. Soar and 4%, I don't know, it increased by 4%, but it's a perfectly good number, and that's fine. However, the glass half empty version, and Reuters has this, is that the UAE's biggest lender, FAB, posts a quarterly net profit decrease. And this is what's happening. If you look at the quarterly numbers, what's happening with the quarterly numbers? It's up, sorry, it's not a decrease. It's up slightly, but not quite as much. So it, depending if you look at the quarterly numbers or the annual numbers, you get a slightly different story. And Reuters points out that you had Emirates NBD reported a 15% decline in quarterly earnings earlier this week. Abu Dhabi Commercial Bank reported a 16% decline in quarterly earnings this week. And that the issue is impairments for bad loans. Now, I thought that was a kind of 2015-16 problem when the oil price fell off a cliff, lots of SMEs had challenges. But Reuters says FAB net impairment charges were up 17% year on year. So all the banks putting aside more money for bad debts, what do they know? What's the canary in the coal mine telling us? So yes, the profit FAB is up. They're doing well. The other thing, and I know you picked up on this, was comments from the chairman of FAB as well, Sheikh Tahnoon bin Zayed Al Nahyan, who's the chairman of the organisation, saying 2019 marked another year of growth for FAB, despite challenging market conditions regionally and internationally. So accepting that there are challenges. So yeah, the headline number is good, there's growth, and then that's fine. But let's look at you've got to look a bit in a bit more detail at the nuances here.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
I want to say welcome to a wonderland, an amusement park full of delights, and the best part is they have one in every town. It's your local supermarket where you ride a cart around. They have stacks of candy in every aisle and every kind of cereal that goes on for miles.
But we're not talking about riding carts around this morning. Carrefour is to start using robots in special micro-fulfillment centres to get your online grocery order to you. We are joined in the studio now by Henny Weiss, who is the CEO of Majid Al Futtaim Retail, the parent company of Carrefour here in the region. Henny, it's lovely to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Lovely to see you. Happy morning.
Tell us what you're building here.
So we are building a new facility, which is within of our stores, you know, which is around mini fulfillment center that is fully robotized using the latest technology from around the world and really a cutting edge technology that will help the e-commerce to boost even faster.
At the moment, if I order some groceries online for you at Carrefour, what happens?
So at the moment, when you order, you place your order online. But behind this technology, there are a lot of my colleagues who are doing a fantastic job in picking the products from the store and making sure they deliver it on time. Tomorrow, this process in picking the products in store will be 100% automized, robotized in the mini fulfillment center, where we will be able to deliver twice more than what we are doing currently. And the other advantage also is that we are able to cut the out of stock and make sure that the products are always available for our customers.
We'll get to how you do that in a moment, but the word robot is very loose. I mean, we tend to picture things with faces, maybe, and arms and legs. What are we actually talking here?
We are talking about a sophisticated machine, which is a box that goes, you know, on top of a grill, pick up the products in a basket and put them ready to be picked up by our colleagues in less than 5 minutes. So the whole delivery picking will be done in 5 minutes versus today more than 25 minutes or 30 minutes per store.
And what have you had to actually build? I mean, the micro-fulfillment centers, first off, how many are you going to have here in the UAE?
So we have secured 3 in the beginning, but this is only the beginning because we want to really go even beyond that. And we are thinking of another bigger technology for our fulfillment centers here in the UAE, but also in Saudi.
And what do they look like inside? I mean, are we talking about groceries being vertically stacked? Do these baskets travel in different directions? Talk me through it.
Absolutely right. So there is a sort of, imagine, big grill, vertical grill. The area is a small area, is only 1,500 square meters. So it fits exactly within our stores, big stores. And we will be much closer to our customers in terms of reducing the last mile. So we are talking about the grill. On top of the grill, there is robot that goes right, left, you know, pick up the products in a crate and deliver them on the conveyor. The picking will put them in the bag, ready to be delivered in very, very short period of time.
What about making value judgments? Are the robots able to look at a banana and think, yeah, really big brown spot on that one. I probably won't take that. I'll take the banana to the left.
It's a great question. We are doing this mini fulfillment center currently only for ambient goods. So the fresh will continue to be picked up by our team because we need this human touch. We need to make sure that we deliver our customers the best quality.
I'm going to throw the same bit of jargon at you that I threw on Basil from Kareem about half an hour ago. Yeah. Unit economics.
Absolutely.
Because much like ride hailing, there are those who question the unit economics of the Uber, Lyft, Kareem model. There are lots of concerns about the online delivery model. I'll give you a couple of examples. I'm looking at some research from Capgemini, the consultancy, that says on average, it costs supermarkets $10 an order to deliver food. But while most of us are happy with a $2 or $3 delivery charge for Deliveroo or Uber Eats, we're not going to pay it psychologically for a supermarket to deliver it. That's what the guys at Capgemini have found. And Walmart, even though they've invested billions, the world's biggest supermarket chain, they say that their losses on their delivery business are growing in 2019 and will continue to grow in 2020. Can anyone make money out of online grocery delivery?
This is absolutely a great question because so far no one made money on grocery delivery. However, the main target for Majid Al Futtaim today is become prominent digitally as we are physically. And what better place than the UAE, where our customers are very much into technology. You know, they want the best in class customer experience. So it's true that the mini fulfillment center, there is an investment, but the cost of this investment has much higher, bigger return on investment in 2 years after the investment is being done. Today, we will have with this mini fulfillment center double the capacity of what we are doing currently. And this will eliminate big chunk of the cost on the fulfillment cost. It's true that no one has done it yet, but we are in the right path to build a very profitable business model in a couple of years from now.
How much are you investing in this?
So we are investing a very small amount versus the amazing customer experience.
Give us a ballpark figure, honey.
It's not a big amount. It's very, very small amount versus...
Less than $100,000?
No, it can't be. It can't be.
Well, then tell me what a small amount is in your business.
We're talking about technology, robotics that will help us to deliver the best-in-class customer experience. So honestly, the value doesn't matter. What is really important, first is the customer experience. Second, the return on investment for us, because we know that in 2 years from now, we'll be able to double our capacity and reduce the cost by half, the store in picking cost.
A job's going to go as a result of this.
The job is going to be repurposed. We are living in the fourth industrial revolution. And one of our main targets as a business owners, as a CEO, to always think how we can reskill and upskill our team. And be sure that the team who are doing today the in-store picking will be doing another job that will help us to improve the customer experience in our stores also. So the robots are not going to replace the people. The robots will help us to do, and technology in general, will help us to do better job. Will not be there to replace people. And as I said earlier, the fresh food will continue to be picked up manually by our team. So we are talking here only about ambient goods.
In terms of the logistics of keeping this food safe and healthy, one of the challenges that the grocery industry is facing is that different foods need to be stored at different temperatures. We're in any supermarket and you have the freezer, you have the fridge, many, many different temperatures. How do you make sure that once it leaves this robotic warehouse and goes into a van or any other transportation device, particularly in summer when it's 40, 50 degrees outside, that you keep the yogurt at one temperature and the frozen peas at another temperature and brandies, bananas at another temperature?
Absolutely. So this is a very critical issue, especially here in the UAE. As you know, the weather in the summer is completely, you know, the heat is very nice, you know. But however, we secure completely the supply chain from the moment we pick up the products until it gets delivered to our the customer's doorsteps. And why we are saying that? Because we have invested heavily in the right storage system in our warehouses, but also in the van that transport the goods. They are all chilled van. And what we do today, before delivering the products to our customers, we have a temperature measure. So we take the temperature. We make sure that the customer read very well in which temperature we are transporting the goods before even delivering it to our customers.
So do you have four different fridges in your van? One for the frozen meat, one for the fresh meat, one for the dairy, and one for the vegetables?
We have only two. We have one for the frozen, and all the ambient and fruits and vegetables goes to a chiller.
And that's good enough for a
journey. We have the best in class quality control team. We have our hygiene team who tested the products all over the way and make sure that we don't tolerate at all when it comes to food quality and hygiene.
Before we let you go, honey, what percentage of your sales are coming through the online orders at the moment?
Today, the percentage is still very small worldwide. And you know, the best in class varies between 5 to 7, 8%. Here in the region, the percentage is still very low. But on average, we are talking around 2% today of our sales that we expect to go up to 20% in 5 years from now.
Hani Weiss, CEO of Majid Al Futtaim Retail, parent company of Carrefour here. Thank you very much for joining us on the Business Breakfast
Pleasure.
This morning.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.